Hey folks. Welcome back. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's good to have you here. Grateful for you, grateful for your presence. And grateful to be able to share this recording with you. A few days ago, I got together with a very dear friend, Tucker Walsh. I imagine many of you know Tucker. And Tucker and I got together to do a recording after Tucker sent me an article that he wrote about the future of the coaching industry. Tucker sent me this article and shared that he wanted to get my views and my input on the industry of coaching and what might be emerging next for coaches, how that relates to the future of society and planetary systems, intentional community, and the way that we live and work and exchange and share our gifts with each other. So I told Tucker, hey man, I'd love to respond to you, and I would probably need at least an hour to even set context and start to get into these passions of mine in terms of the emerging economy and what's coming online for coaching. And Tucker invited the possibility to get together, and ultimately, the conversation led to us deciding to do a recording. Pretty sure the impulse came through me. So here we are. Long story short, or long story long, got together with Tucker a few days ago and put this recording together. So I'm excited to share it with you. I'm excited to have you here. As always, I invite you to sink in. Invite you to take a couple breaths and just relax into the field that Tucker and I are hanging out in. I thoroughly enjoyed the what I would call flow leadership in the conversation with Tucker and me. You might notice in our recording there are many times where flow is coming through one of us and we become aware that it's time to let go of the speaking and let the other person speak because flowing through the other. And I just really am grateful for the attunement that I experienced from both Tucker and myself and letting flow flow, letting flow lead. So it's a good recording and embodied example of flow leadership and letting flow flow through whoever flow is flowing through in the moment. So yeah. And before I hit play on the recording and share our conversation with you all, I'll just name a couple life updates, a couple opportunities and ways to be in connection. So I've just arrived in Estorillos, Costa Rica, and I'm partnering with retreat centers and well-being centers and healing centers here in Costa Rica. So if you're interested in coming to Costa Rica and spending a weekend or a week or a month or a couple of months hanging out around me and other practitioners, other healers, other embodied examples of the emerging way of being and trying out different healing modalities, whether it's body work, energy work, psychosomatic healing, frequency healing, plant medicine, and good old Mother Nature. We got some good beach and jungle and sunlight here. Invite you to reach out and let me know, and we can explore opportunities and possibilities together. And I have a couple of spots opened up in my coaching practice. So if you're interested in exploring the possibility of working with me one-on-one or in a group coaching program, I invite you to reach out and let me know. Happy to get together and explore if it's a good fit. If you've ever done a sales call with me, you know that my process is just getting clear on where you are and what you're needing and whether or not we're a good fit for each other, whether or not we're a full body yes for each other. And if not, I usually have a good referral or some people, communities, books, podcasts, other content, other materials for you to play with. Just, yeah. I really enjoy meeting you all and having conversations and exploring whether we're a good fit to work together. And if not me, then who or what can be of support for you right now. So if you're lighting up and feeling energized hearing this, invite you to reach out and shoot me an email. You can write me at Forrest with two R's, B as in boy, Wilson with one L at gmail.com. You can also go to forestbwilson.com or Forrest B. Wilson on Instagram. I'm Forrest B. Wilson everywhere. So Facebook, Instagram, email, all the things. Okay, that'll be my, there's one more thing. We've created a WhatsApp community for our emerging future. So if you go to ouremergingfuture.com, you can click join WhatsApp community and get involved with the growing ecosystem of people who are passionate about bringing a new world into being. So got some different channels on there. If you're looking for someone to get together with and have coffee, get to know each other more, a couple of the programs we're running and just the broader global community that's passionate about reinventing planetary systems and bringing a new world into being. Okay, that's all for announcements and welcoming an introduction. Without further ado, here is the recording with Tucker and enjoy. Welcome, Tucker.
Hey, Forrest.
Thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Okay, so in this moment, the thing I feel most aliveness to connect with you around is that it seems that for me, the better part of a decade, and I make up for you for the better part of a decade, you and I have been traveling around the world, in pursuit of something or, following something, being pulled by something. And I just feel really connected with you in this sense of like leaning into the future and hanging out with people who are on the leading edge and opening up and going, how the heck do we download the future into this moment? What's the future of humanity look like? What do we need to heal or resolve to be available for this future? And I guess at first I just want to like celebrate you and honor you for this projection I'm putting onto you that's resonant from my life experience. But also like maybe unpack this a little bit together and see what is this dance that we're doing?
Well, it almost feels like one of the most enjoyable ways that I've discovered to be in the present is to be with the future. And sort of there's a paradox in there. It's like the present now becomes all the more delicious when there's a sense of evoking or birthing or bringing in a future reality that is sort of projected out as something in the future, but is also simultaneously arising here now as this. And I often use the metaphor of a lighthouse because it feels like a light that is beaming out into the black sky, into the void of infinite potential, you could say. And it attracts in people like you. And that just makes life more enjoyable.
Yeah, and so there's been a transition a little bit for you recently, because my story or my concept of you is you settled down a bit in Boulder and created a lighthouse collective in Boulder and are building community. And it seems like there's a little bit more concrete stability. Does that feel true?
That does feel true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've been, let's say about 6 years ago, my life in Los Angeles was beginning to unravel at a pretty steady pace. It was a beautiful, beautiful life as a film director, and I was in a 10-year relationship and had, all the things, a really lovely home and a beautiful car and very successful career. And then, yeah, there was sort of this moment where I was looking into the future and I just had this sense of, okay, like, so I did this thing, whatever this thing is, I did it and I'm doing it. And am I just going to keep doing this for like the next 40, 50 years? And all of a sudden it was like the bubble of passion and aliveness that I had since I was 13 years old and I started getting into photography. This just sort of popped. And in that popped bubble, it was like I was a little balloon or a bubble, and then the bubble popped, and all of a sudden there was this vast spaciousness, and it was quite overwhelming and disorienting. But also I knew on a deeper level that it was beautiful and perfect and exactly what needed to be happening. So both were true simultaneously. And from that process, I just started to follow the thread of, you know, went on the day that I left my house in Los Angeles, I like officially moved out. I shipped a bunch of boxes to my parents' house to store in their basement. And I was started my nomadic journey. And I went that very same day to my first Vision Quest ceremony in Southern California and just had like a really beautiful, yeah, that's an understatement, just to call it a beautiful experience, a life-changing experience. And then it was just one thread after the next, one moment, one domino falling and one synchronicity after the next, and brought me to all these different intentional communities and several different countries. And it was a beautiful journey of weaving. And now there's a way in which that's still happening, but it's happening in a more physically rooted context here in Boulder. I'm noticing that there's like thousands of different doors that I could go down. And so I want to leave it up to you to see which ones we should open, because each of these themes could be a multi series podcast in itself.
Yeah, totally. Well, I feel a little bit of an undercurrent building, because ultimately our inspiration for getting together today was to explore money in some way and the emerging economy and like what's up with the world of transformational work and coaching and these things. But I love what's happening, because I see some, at least I see some of you and me, or I feel some sense of a shared experience, in the sense that I went to college and had a corporate job internationally, but it was working in corporate finance. And then my father passed away a few days after I turned 24 years old. And that's when I really said, okay, I've achieved everything I was supposed to achieve. I had a big bubble burst and a big spaciousness open, and really dove in and spent, I think I had 20 different jobs in my 20s, working in different, everything from like founding a startup and founding a nonprofit to working in different organizations to waiting tables to managing social media for people. I mean, I just kind of did everything, built an app, like all kinds of stuff, but discovering what lights me up. And then there were, go ahead. Yeah. What?
I said, like a true millennial.
Like a true millennial. Exactly. Yeah. We think we're special, don't we? And then we realize, yeah, maybe not so much. And then there was more bubbles that popped, because there were bigger awakenings and bigger openings that happened. But the way I want to loop this thread in is there's, you know, we could emerge some phases or signposts or locations or stages or something of being in the conventional world, which it seems like you and I both did pretty well, and then popped through that into some kind of post corporate life. Like, now I'm gonna go travel the world and go to festivals and gatherings and retreats and see what's there beyond corporate America, basically. What is there beyond late stage capitalism? And and then there's, I don't know about you, but for me, there was like the moment I completely ran out of money, and even beyond that was like quite a bit in debt, you know, $20,000 in debt. And it's like, okay, how can I have the freedom of existence and being able to pursue my passions and do what I want, and also be able to function in modernity or in reality where we need to pay for things? Although there are a couple of people on near air, like on YouTube, who I've seen have gone like a year without spending a dollar. That's never been my calling, but I'm just gonna rock with the assumption that we're in the question of how do we function in both this post late stage capitalism society and also operate in late stage capitalism society simultaneously.
Yeah, I would say when I was a filmmaker in Los Angeles and, living in Venice Beach and really working a ton, the main story that I had, probably an unconscious story, but the main story I had was that you work hard in order to have moments of intimacy and connection and joy and community and belonging. Like if you work really hard and you do a good job, then you can belong. And so in a way, the structures of capitalism were like the gatekeepers between what I might call basic human universal rights, not necessarily rights in a political sense, although maybe that would be a wise idea, but rights in the sense of, kind of the things that, I'll put it this way, when I'm on my deathbed, the memories that I'll probably remember are moments where I'm deeply connecting and attuned and probably involved a level of physical touch and deep emotional intimacy, a quality of the sacred. And in a lot of these moments, it felt like my whole life was sort of structured around working really hard in order to have a few of those moments a year. And maybe I could have a lot of those moments with my romantic partner at like 8:30 at night when I got home and I was exhausted and we could cuddle on the couch and watch Netflix together. But otherwise, that's something you kind of work for to experience on vacation or when you're able to pay to go to a music concert or something like that. And then, if I wasn't so busy, then I could also pay $25 to go to yoga class on Sunday or to go to, maybe like a cacao ceremony for $75. And you get like 2 hours of sort of that feeling of being deeply connected to other humans, in a way that is outside of the direct context of work. And there's a way in which I could. There's like a few moves here. I could do like a shadow work move, or I could do like a sort of spiritual bypass move or something of being like, well, if I just meditate enough, then I can connect with the source of, the love that is always already here. And then I don't need to go to, kirtans or concerts or talk to my friend Forrest or whatever. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. And that's been a huge part of my journey. But then there's also a way in which like, okay, like this is great. And it would be really fun to also have these other types of connection, and intimacy and joy and laughter and celebration and ceremony and ritual, and have that be just a part of everyday waking experience, not something that we work to experience in small doses. And basically, I experienced that quite palpably and beautifully and totally imperfectly and also exquisitely gorgeously, in several different intentional communities and places that I've been to over the past few years on my journeys, and places that I've really apprenticed to, like my on like a deep soul level, there feels like there was an apprenticeship to these places. And so what I'm interested in is, for this conversation at least, is how can we restructure? I mean, there's like different halons of this, maybe. Like we could talk about it on a global planetary scale. We could talk about it on a political systems, societal structural scale. We could talk about it as just a community, like one sort of lighthouse prototype of what an intentional community could be. Or we could talk about it in an internal, way, like how we can work with different psychological parts or different ways of being in the world. We could also just talk about it right now in our relationship in this we space that we're, weaving. But for me, what I'm really interested in is like, how can we make basically love, joy, connection, trust, intimacy, celebration, creativity, they're like, it's like the base operating system from which all of our structures and our lives arise. It's like the healthy soil in which everything grows, and that what grows then eventually will drop down and, you know, compost back into the soil and create even more nutrients. So it creates this sort of regenerative, reciprocal infinity loop of nourishment and deliciousness. And I'll pause there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you said that, when you said, I was kind of, I don't know how to say this, like melting away in your transmission. I wasn't getting the words so much. I was just enjoying the reverberation, but you were saying like creativity, generosity, reciprocity, care, love, inspiration, these currencies or these energies, these fields be the creative ground that we birth structures from. And hearing you, my impact was like, yeah, that's already the case. And there's also other fields that we're creating from, like scarcity, not enoughness, things aren't all rightness, et cetera, et cetera, right? Like there's this chronic fight or flight state in our collective body. That's my experience of humanity right now as a being. I'm really connect to the soil that you're invoking and speaking to as the creative ground of being. And I'm present to other fields, denser fields that are soggy on top of the nutrient dense soil.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for you to hear?
Yeah, totally. So there's so many different, you know, viewpoints or vantage points in which we could be having this conversation in, and I think it'd be fun to jump between them. So there's a way in which I can walk into a Target, you know, superstore or whatever, and just feel like deeply connected with the beautiful people that are walking by and the souls, and feeling the transmission of everyone's energy and feeling the intimacy of all these different materials created from all over the world, and the way that gets to weave through the unfolding moments of just sheer beauty and like really being fully with the divinity of this experience, and celebrating the fact that we even get to be fucking alive at all. Like, it's a miracle. And there's a way in which all those same experiences or you call them universal qualities perhaps, can be present in a way that also can feel like, on a personal level, on a physical level, on an energetic level, and on a, for me, a soul level, there's sort of a deeper harmony, and like those universal qualities come into a deeper harmony with the individual personality that has its subjective preferences and desires and visions for the world and dreams and goals. And then there's also a way in which like that can all be contextualized and wrapped up in the larger unfolding of human history and, you know, the evolutionary potential of our species and the different crises happening on our planet. And so as much as possible, like being with that all and holding that all, and often it's not really in a conceptual way, although that's very useful and comes in often, but it's like an embodied felt sense of a knowing of like, yes, and it's like, fuck yes. It's like, actually, yeah, it's like, fuck yes, this is so beautiful and perfect. And let's create from this place of beauty and perfection a new place that can be somehow even more nourishing. Like somehow it can be even more delicious. And even if it never even becomes, just in the process of becoming with it as a possibility, it's like more or less already in existence. Maybe it hasn't fully trickled down into concrete material form yet, but there's some being with process or birthing with process that is beautiful. An example of this is a couple of hours ago, I was just outside and I just sat down in the sunlight, and it was so beautiful and nourishing on my body and my skin. And all of a sudden I started to sort of hear myself speaking to you in this podcast. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like the podcast is already recording itself in this moment and I'm the viewer of it. And yet, like, we're not physically recording it on Zoom at that point, but we are already in we are already in the process of being together. And that's kind of how I feel about evolution or the future.
Yeah. It's so there's a state of consciousness, a field that we're hanging out in, that we sense when there's more and more folks who are in this field, there's a collective resonance field generated. And from this, we birth a new reality. And it's kind of a thing of like, okay, here's Forrest, here's Tucker. We're probably hanging out in a pretty similar field, like embodying heaven on earth here now, or the Garden of Eden is available to all of us in every moment. It's whether or not we're available for it and aware of it. And then there's also other realities that we're interfacing with people who are coming from a different place. And so this big system of fields, right? Like this big network and system of fields, how do all of these hang out and dance together? And that's a little bit, I feel like, where the friction or the rub is because you and I say, okay, let's, you know, we're in the eternity of right now. We're just hanging out here, like being in communion with each other and the divine, and being in relationship in the moment, having all these beautiful experiences, like the one you were just articulating with him in the sunlight, and invite other people to hang out this way. And of course, it doesn't take more than a couple minutes before you hear the like, well, how does that make money? Or, you know, what am I going to do to XYZ in relationship to my bills? And all that energy comes in really intensely. And so that's been a lot of my work in the world. I know that's a lot of the conversation of the big shift, the big transition that we're in on a planetary scale right now, is we're palpably aware that here now in this moment, that we don't have to live in survival consciousness. We can really let go of that and embody heaven on earth together. And we can't do that on other people's behalf. That's, you know, it's for each of us to choose where we orient from. So yeah, I'll pause here.
Yeah. I'm curious just to hear more about your vision for the future around money and what brings you most joy and aliveness around this topic. I have this story that I often feel a deep resonance with pretty much everything you share 90%+ of the time, but there's been a few times in the past where I've heard you speak about money and I've been a bit more like, I don't know, you know, it's like, it's raised a sense of maybe there's some contrast in our holdings of money and what it is and our relationship with it. And to me, I love that. That's something I celebrate. And I can't recall any specifics, but maybe if we just be in dialogue together, some of that might come out.
Yeah, cool. I love that too. I love our, I don't know, individualness or uniqueness in addition to our sameness. Yeah, if you have any memories or hits of the things that you felt a little dissonance with, I'd love to
hear. I remember that one.
Okay, tell me. Yeah.
So I hear this a lot in the coaching world and industry, which I'm tangentially a part of. I have a coaching certificate, but it's not part of my active life as being a coach in a vocational sense. But there's often sort of a sense of like the more money one is making or the more money one is charging, it's an indicator of one's success, or and like it's kind of the idea that like the better coach you become, the more you can charge, the more money you can have. And I guess often that's phrased as like that's just more energy and abundance that you can have to spill out back into the world. And yeah, maybe like the hippie in me, the radical progressive that was wearing, you know, like tie-dye t-shirts and Birkenstocks in high school and had like coexist bumper stickers. And, you know, I love that part of me so much. And I'm not a, you know, financial expert, and I haven't studied money in any deep sense. So most of what I'm sharing on these topics feel like sort of interjected stories I've heard from elsewhere. But yeah, I have a sense of like, is that what my personal principle is to basically like play the game of capitalism as best as I can as an indicator of my own personal success and of the success of the work I'm doing in the world? Or do I want to, or is like maybe the principle that feels most resonant for me is to make as little money as possible in order for me to have my needs met within the context of our current system, but without playing into sort of the suffering that I think capitalism and modern society in general and all the different narratives that come with that system tend to create. And so I'm more interested in like evolving the current systems into a new model, as I know you are as well, and rather than kind of like really trying to like master the current system, if that makes sense. I could go into more, but I'll pause. And maybe I'll just say that part of this is I did that in the past. Like I was making $500,000 a year when I was 25 years old, and it brought me a lot of happiness. It brought me a lot of experiences, and I ate at incredible restaurants and traveled all over the world. And but now that just doesn't interest me that much. Like I'd rather live in like a pretty moderate home in nature with some friends and like all cook together and just kind of like try and be as outside of the system while moving the system towards what my heart is like pulsating my entire being towards.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing that, you know, for me is my, if you have a create a hierarchy or you have a list of priorities, right? Like that's the North Star or the guiding light or the force that's moving me too, right? Letting flow, letting the divine lead, letting life have its own unfolding. I use this phrase, the choiceless path or the mystical path often, which is like, we can't avoid who we are forever. So when we really let go into the truth of who we are, how does the truth of who we are unfold as Forrest or as Tucker?
Yeah.
And underneath those priorities, you know, several priorities down, there's like money, right? How does money support this natural, organic unfolding of Forrest and Tucker? Mm-hmm. And this is the real, it's somewhat of a passion point for me, and it's also a pain point, right? Like this has been really hard. And I also see so many people who I love so dearly who've moved through. Maybe not everybody makes $500,000 a year doing film, but some people typically have some sort of conventional thing and move beyond that, become some kind of practitioner of energy work or body work or a trainer of some kind, and start to pursue other passions and interests. Maybe it's regenerative agriculture or something. And then I see in all of these communities when I travel the world, there's so many beautiful people with big hearts and big consciousnesses and big brilliant minds who are having a really hard time financially. And mm-hmm. And I have so many I don't know if it's me just attracting these people or if it really is just the state of the world, but there's so many young brilliant people who can't do the corporate life, right? Can't do 9 to 5 in an office. And once you jump ship from that, I really hold it that you just can't go back, basically. And then there's not like a real, it's a big chasm over to the other side, if there even is another side of some sense of, you know, maybe there's not another side, but if there is some sense of stability on the other side of the jump, it's a much bigger jump than maybe we imagine when we jump. And so some of my passion personally, I mean, there's been a personal Forrest passion of, okay, how can I live from here, live from the moment, enjoy my life, follow, you know, let aliveness lead, let the divine lead, be in this organic unfolding and have a roof over my head. Cause I did end up homeless a few years ago when I was in Austin, Texas. I ran out of money completely. I've had many nights where I don't know where I'm going to stay. I've had many times where I don't know how I'm going to pay for a meal, and days and weeks and months and years of having tens of thousands of dollars of credit card debt, where I'm just in this chronic state of being stressed out. And, you know, I've gotten to a point now where I don't have any debt, and I have, you know, money in the bank that I can move through reality with. And it's a much better experience if I'm going to judge. I mean, all experiences are great experiences, and in my judgment, it's a better experience. And I've wondered, okay, how do we build escalators through consciousness to support more people moving through this really challenging terrain between what is perceived as stability in corporate America and then the tumultuous wild, wild west of the deep end of the unknown, to get to the place where we can afford the moderate sized home and the food that nourishes us when we're living with friends out in the mountains. And, you know, be able to, maybe we have a car that we need to pay for, and maybe we have taxes we need to pay for, and maybe we have family in other parts of the country we want to buy flights to go see, and maybe we want to buy people gifts that we love. And, you know, how do we play in these realities too, where money's a thing? So there's some combination of passion and suffering that's driven me to play this out for myself, but also larger we's of people who I see are, like, our generation is really in this, in my judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel a lot of compassion and appreciation for your journey. Yeah. Just feeling this sense of the deep wisdom in your own trajectory and in all the places it's taken you to. I've been very fortunate to never experienced financial insecurity pretty much in my whole life. And so part of that came with a lot of shame at one point, 5-6 years ago, of like really feeling a sense of shame about my privilege essentially, and all the different forms that could come about. And there were some concrete actions that I took to make reparations for some of that privilege that I felt like was a way to help me more deeply attune to how I can be in the world in this particular time and place as this particular identity. And then like a shift started to happen where the shame kind of turned into life force, passion and energy and fire that began to drive this motivating soul calling in me that started like a whisper and turned into a scream and is now just my voice. And that energy is going towards really wanting to create new holdings, new forms, new systems or structures, new art projects, new experiments for different types of ways that basically humans can live together, connected to the global world and also connected to a physical land-based place, and be nourished in abundant but not excessive ways, individually, collectively, and then as a individual collective unit that's part of a larger collective whole, and how that can interrelate planetarily, maybe even interplanetarily, and basically like how we can attune to the soul of the earth, if I can be so bold to make a claim that there's a soul of the earth that might be speaking through all living beings on this planet. So I feel that there's ways in which I've experienced little pockets of places on the planet that feel like they are an emanation of the future alive now. And it's almost like a more developed form of consciousness, you could say, that is sort of ahead of its time, like Sri Aurobindo or somebody like that, you know? And it's like you go to these places and I feel like I'm in the future. I feel like I've time traveled. And that's not to say that it's a utopian future. I'm pleased and also sad to say that I haven't yet found the perfect utopian future. And it's not a future that is totally devoid or cut off or removed from the current systems. It is a future that is emanating as a evolving. It's like a mutation of the future of the current systems. So it feels like it's a launching off of and into some more beautiful whole while still rooted in the times that we're in now, which to me feels more practical. Like I'm not necessarily trying to, in my lifetime at least, find some way to like completely overturn modern society and capitalism. I wouldn't try to do that even if I wanted to, and I don't want to. I'm just noticing the energy in my body go like, zoop, so I'm just going to stop talking and trust that.
I like that awareness. That's awesome. Thanks. That's super cool. I resonate with that. Yeah, just like pausing when the energy drops. So in terms of so one thing I want to say on the personal level is, like you and I tend to hang out from the place of the stories and constructs we create with the mind are made up. So what's the most helpful one, right? Like what are the most useful stories we can create? And I want to share a couple of them that might be of service to this. So for me, when we're talking about, you were talking earlier about connecting to these these deeper currents of the universe of creativity, these fields of creativity and love and compassion and wholeness and well-being. And for me, I'm going, yeah, so the place that people typically do the work of connecting with these undercurrents of our true nature and opening up to them and embodying them more fully while letting go of old ways of being that aren't serving anymore is in transformational containers with mm-hmm. coaches and therapists and healers and and folks. So I'm going, in some ways there can't be enough people doing this work right now in some way. And they're like in some ways, go ahead. Yeah.
I would say that the coaching, therapy, healing industry, the modern capitalist healing industry is the new church of our generation. Instead of going to the Catholic church, instead of going to our, you know, village ceremonies around the fire where we had our, you know, ancient rituals, and instead of going to the Catholic church, and instead of going to the Taylor Swift concert, the postmodern culture, which is largely made up of, you know, a lot of millennials, goes to basically the healing industry, the coaches, the therapists, the cacao ceremonies, the psychedelic retreats, the meditation retreats. And it's where we find our deepest moments of life force energy. It's the deepest reminder of why it's a gift to be alive is often in those containers.
Yeah. I'm saying yes, and I'm also taking in what you're sharing and seeing how it impacts me. So let me see. I mean, ultimately, so I guess the first thing that comes up hearing you is like in church, you go in and there's a pastor or a preacher or somebody who's at the front of the church and they say, hey, you know, here's what the Bible says. I haven't spent a lot of time in church. So I've spent some time in church, but my experience at church,
the Bible, yeah, they sing songs,
you know, yeah, they sing songs and you donate money. And like, you know, I've been to church, but I haven't been many times. You know, if it's and I mean, I guess hypothetically in church, the idea would be that you develop a relationship with God yourself. And I know that that's, if you're working with a good practitioner or a good coach in the healing industry, as you're speaking to, that's also what's happening. People are supporting you, connecting with your own relationship with God. You can see a lot of things go sideways when people are the medium between you and God, right? When you need another person to be in relationship with God, that's when things can get real wonky. Coming in from the right now, one of the things that I want to say is, for me, money has been one of the most profound spiritual teachers I've ever had in my life. Mm. And that's something I really want to get into the fold here. Money is one of the most honest energies, maybe the most honest energy I've ever interfaced with. I experience money as a being of light, like pure light, aren't we all? And so one of the things that the essence of this conversation is it's kind of maddening, right? Where it's like, okay, so I'm, no matter what we do, like let's say it's a coaching contract, I go and pay someone $5,000, $30,000, $300,000. I met someone recently who charges $20 million a year for coaching, right? This completely shattered my worldview of what's even possible in the coaching industry. And ultimately, we know we're selling water to somebody standing in a river, right? It's like everything we need is already here. You're already perfect and whole. What we're connecting you to, you have access to without, like, you don't need me as a coach. Like I tell anybody that you don't need me as a coach. Now the sales process I do is like, do we get a full body yes to working with each other? Does this feel like a resonant fit? Cause I can walk next to somebody in their process. I can't walk the path for you. And there's lots of people you could choose to walk with. So if I start claiming I'm the only one who can get you there, again, where things are going to get wonky. Okay, now I'm noticing a little turbulence, so I'm going to pause and come to you.
Yeah, I mean, can I be provocative?
Please, yeah. Yes, please. That'd be great.
I would say that... I like to play sort of the polar end of the spectrum often. And so I'm not saying that these are my perspectives, but they're just perspectives that are arising in me, you could say. I mean, a lot of people could say that war has been a profound spiritual teacher for them, or that the time that they were raped or grew up physically abused. And so I think that there's a way in which we can discern when and how and to what degree is money abusive, and when is it emanating light of perfection, and when is it both, and when is it important to distinguish what it is, and in what context is it important to distinguish, and what context is it important to feel the unification of those and to tell that narrative as a cultural introject that will get passed on, you know, like ripples in a pond. And
can
I don't I, have
can any, I speak I to that real quick?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because this is such an important one for me, which is I personally, help me if I'm missing something, help me see it, but I've never actually seen money be abusive. I have seen people be abusive and use money, give money the credit for it, right? I have seen people treat each other terribly and then give money the credit for why they're treating each other terribly.
Yeah. I mean, that's a similar argument that gun rights folks make of like, it's not the gun that killed the person, it's the person that killed the person. And so I think that there's a way in which that's fully true, like full stop, you know, true, end of sentence. And it's also true that given the trauma and developmental capacities and situational crises that are unfolding in the larger landscape, certain tools might not be best for certain folks at certain times. And who am I to say, you know, what that is? I'm barely able to figure that out in my own individual life. So I'm not claiming to have like some almighty perspective here. Although I did want to be president of the United States when I was a little kid. So some part of me feels that I know it all. Oh, well.
What I'm loving about this moment is I really feel like we've gotten to the point of like Forrest and Tucker speaking perspectives in the collective psyche right now that are wanting to be interfaced, yeah, archetypal, universal archetypal perspectives that want to be in relationship with each other. So I'm enjoying the like transpersonal or non-personal and personal aspects of this. So here's the thing, from a functional consciousness perspective, right? It's like, okay, like with war, right? I just go like, what's the functions that war are serving? And then can we create other ends or other tools that serve these means. And same thing with money. What is the function that money is serving? And what are the other tools? What are the other strategies? What are the other means that we can do to serve the underlying ends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And so I guess there's two strains that are arising. One is a strain of like money itself. And money, I think, maybe is a synonym for capitalism. I don't know if like a dollar bill itself is necessarily, it's just a symbol for a larger system or a series of larger systems. And so maybe there's that. But then there's also just the path of like, regardless of any of this, even though of course it's all interwoven and interpenetrating, there's just the path, the soul path that like my heart and body, everything. I can't, there's nothing at this point, there's nothing in my life that is stopping life itself from like just all momentum, all cylinders firing, or just encouraging this path to continue walking itself almost. And at this point, that almost feels like regardless of the larger cultural stories, it just feels like an impulse that is it's like it would be like not listening to God's direct advice or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe it's literal.
Yeah, and it's right, exactly. It's like, well, and there's even like, I don't know about for you, but there's way less, there's even more of a deeper sense of that's what we are than the human being I previously identified as, who was getting sloshed around by all kinds of different universal forces, and including that one. But
I have a question arising. Can I throw it to you?
Sure, yeah.
When you have kids that are your age, you know, in their early 30s, what do you have a vision or a particular, even just like a felt sense or a feeling of what that world is like, maybe in general, but as it pertains to money as well? And really, like, what does money even stand for, right? Like, money can be a way to liberate our creative wholeness, something like that.
For me, money is a manifestation of the energy of manifestation. Like, money as an energetic is the energy of manifestation. That's how I would define money. So it's, in some ways, it's our capacity to do things. It's our energetic. Actually, I don't like that. I'm going to retract that statement. It's not our capacity to do things. Yeah, I'm going to stick with the first one. It's the energy of manifestation. When I see my son, I have a sense my oldest is going to be a son. So I'm just going to go with what I get. My oldest son being 30, what am I, 32? 32 now. I see this global village that's quite luminous, I see this like global village of light. I see technologies made of light. And I see, so one of the things I, so any, for anyone listening, you might know, or you might want to know that I sit with the consciousness of money often. I have a very deep relationship with the consciousness of money. I speak to money often and listen to money often. It's been a really great friend and teacher for me. And one of the things that money has showed me is like, if you look at every human being as a cell in the body of the superorganism of humanity, as one being, as one humanity, as each human being is a cell, then money is like the fascia, the interconnective tissue of the superorganism. It's the interconnective tissue of the superorganism. And right now on planet Earth, what we have in humanity is the same way in a concrete body, your physical body, you can have a myofascial adhesion, right? Where there's stress, adrenaline, norepinephrine, nutrients, blood, tissue gets bogged up in a certain area, and you do either trauma work or energy work or go see a body work, you have a myofascial release so that all that energy that's stuck in one part of the body can release back into the larger system. What we need right now, we have the same thing in our collective financial body. And what we need is these resources that are stuck in certain places of our collective body to be able to have myocapital releases, where that pent up potential is released back into the collective being and is able to move through the system freely. Now, the more I've sat with this, the more what money has showed me is you can't hang out with money. If you get down to the essence of money, what we see human beings have done is very intimately tied to the construct of ownership. Right? It's ownership and money are very closely interwoven in the human psyche. And human beings have taken the concept of ownership so far that we actually thought we could own other human beings, right? Like we've done that in our history. And I'd never even checked this until money showed me. Right now, human beings think we can own money. We say my money, we say Tucker's money. We have taken ownership over money as a being. And money has showed me what it could be like if we gave ownership of money, or at least our illusionary ownership of money, back to money and said, actually, it's never been our money. It's money's money. It's God's money. It's not our money. What if we let money, the same way to keep the body thing, if the nutrients and energy move through the body the way they need to without us needing to figure out how things move. The world I see when my son's 32 is that money, the information and the wisdom that money offer the superorganism of humanity and our collective financial body moves freely via its own intelligence without us really having to think too much about how all this works. And there's a super intelligence that money can show humanity how evolution's trying to happen by the information it provides that we can liberate by letting go of the concept of ownership over money. So I see a world that's a village of light, essentially, and where money flows freely to support the whole becoming more whole and to support every human being and the collective of humanity and the planetary body and the like bigger wholes becoming more full, becoming more whole, becoming more beautiful. And that's some of what I see. I'll pause.
Yeah, thank you. It's so silly that we're talking about all this.
We're like a news reporter moment, like, over to you, Tucker.
Yeah. Well, the weather in the future today is looking bright and abundant.
Bright and abundant.
I guess what I'm wondering is, how is money different than love? Because if you just replace the word love with every time you use the word money, then I would say, fuck yeah, I share that vision of the future. And I guess from a certain perspective, money is an emanation of love and is love itself. But to me, my concern about money, and again, I'm not sure quite how you're conceiving of this in your own vision, but if somebody feels that if a mom who has a young child or a next door neighbor, and she feels like in order to sort of be in the abundance of manifestation that is happening on a planetary scale, that she needs to do something through the structure of money in order to be a part of that energy, rather than just going over to her next door neighbor and making her soup for an hour. As an act of just love, regardless as to whether or not it plays into the money system that's either local to her community and or global to the planet. And so I'm just curious about why, almost like, why is the middleman necessary? Not from a practical standpoint, but from a philosophical standpoint.
Yeah, well, again, there's a little bit of the money's getting the credit there for something that's like, it sounds like there's a decision of, I can go make, in this hypothetical example, I can go make my neighbor soup, or I can, I'm not sure I get the distinction exactly, but it's like,
like when we grow up, and when I grew up, I was told by my grandfather that if I get a good education, I'll get a good job. And if I get a good job, then I'll be able to afford the things that I like, and I'll be able to make money. And then that money will bring me abundance and joy and all this types of stuff. And so how that's sort of enslaving people to a certain life path, perhaps, that mm-hmm. isn't always necessarily within the interest of the immediacy of the present moment, and how love, like the impulse of love, you call it higher self or your soul or your eros, how does eros want to act in the moment, doesn't always play into how that will make more money for me, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't always play into that. And it does play into that as well. In my personal experience, it's like, so you and I know from, we've done tons of shadow work together, and we know we part of our growing up or cleaning up or waking up process is we let go of these stories that we got when we're kids, right? Like I got so many of these, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, or, you know, my dad used to say, I'm not a rich man, Forrest, even though, like, when I look back in hindsight, like, he was, I mean, maybe he was, it depends how you define rich, but like, I mean, we had a membership at a country club. And when I was a kid, we had a house that we could go skiing at. And both my parents had cars. And when my sister and I became teenagers, we had cars. So, like, you know, I'm, we could have gone to private school if we wanted. I, like, maybe, I don't know what his definition of rich was, but I would say we were doing pretty well. And yet I got the story of, you know, I'm not a rich man. And, or like the biggest pain point for me actually was when I had these creative, you know, you have these, like when you say Eros is moving through and I had these incredibly inspired ideas for here's what I want to create. And the first response from my parents was, how's that going to make money? Right. Mm-hmm. Like that was the big pain one. And so you and I know that we do the process of kind of unbucketing these introjects out and tending to the Eros and the organic evolutionary unfolding of consciousness that's underneath these stories. And then for me, this is where the passion is for has been for Light in Action, our incubator, my coaching work, the work I do with people with money is, as we do that, as we let go of all the stories and experiences and imprints that we had and tend to the Eros and the natural evolutionary unfolding, tending to that, nurturing that, how does that, like, as that unfolds in its own way, how does that interface with exchange? How does that interface with being of service to other people and receiving back? We can receive all kinds of things, one of them being money, right? Mm-hmm. As you know, we can do gift exchanges, we can do sacred exchanges where we trade body work for energy work or whatever, but sometimes we trade and the thing I get in return is, I was going to say a referral. That's also another version, but money is what I was, you know, is what I was saying. Okay. Pausing again. Over to you.
Yeah, that's great. There's another potential iteration of that where one can give without any expectation of receiving anything in return, with the sense of a deep trust that, like, you maybe, I haven't heard this framed in the way that you framed it, but the intelligence of giving and receiving itself will play out naturally as a flow of love. And that because we're living and breathing and sleeping in the context of a community, we know that we're not going to be homeless or that we're not going to, you know, be without food, because we have a family level bond with a large enough amount of people. Now, of course, there might be a natural disaster or whatever, but then the community as a whole is in that together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a way in which maybe that is impractical, like maybe that works really well at Burning Man, but then is very impractical in, you know, inner city Cleveland or whatever, where there's where there's just like completely different life circumstances and traumas and life stories around wealth and money. I don't really know. I haven't done those studies. I'm sure that there's a lot of great research out there around. I imagine that there's people experimenting with this all over the world right now. What I'm wondering is, what would you tell your children? What's the story that you would tell your children about money? Because it's one thing for money to exist as a system, but the story we tell about that system, I think, is even more powerful. So, like, what is your future story of money as it relates to the human experience?
Yeah, I think I want to make sure we're not, the famous Stages phrase is ships passing in the night, but I want to make sure we're not using the same word and meaning different things, because there's, For me, money is a being. It's a consciousness, as first and foremost. Obviously, money is also Bitcoin and US dollars and Mexican pesos and all of the, you know, euros and everything like that, all the different cryptocurrencies. And then there's our current modern day global financial system. When I heard your question just now, it seemed like you were pointing to that. And I wanted to check and see, is that what you're asking about?
Yeah, it's a good distinction. When you say money as a being, what are the limbs of that being? Does that include all the types of currency that are in the global financial system, or does that include other forms of exchange that are outside of a nation-backed currency?
Well, it definitely is outside of a nation-backed currency because we have things like cryptocurrency. But I feel like you're asking, does it also include maybe we would call them spiritual currencies of like compassion and love and insight and wisdom? Is that also what you're asking?
I wasn't quite going there, but sure, we can throw that into this too. Yeah, I think it's helpful maybe for people listening. Like when I hear the word money, what comes up is a dollar bill or my credit card. And so if that's not what you mean by money, then it might be helpful to define that more.
Yeah, right. Because that's what I'm saying is, for me, primarily money is actually a being. Like money is a friend. Money is an entity that I have a relationship with. I mean, I'm not, when I say money shows me something, like I'm not, that's not a joke. Like that's literally like money's like, hey man, come here. I want to show you this thing. Like it's a consciousness. It's a being. So it's a non-human being, right? It's a non-human being, but that's my primary relationship with money, even before dollars and things, because I mean, I love dollars too. I'm like looking over at my wallet. I love dollars and Bitcoins and all these as well. And what human beings have created with money is, on one level, it's like a fraction of what I experience the essence of money to also be. And in so many ways, it's just not even the consciousness it's sourced from is not in harmony with the essence of money. The way I experience money, at least from this one vantage point, the one relationship that I have with money, and of course, also with people, I know so many people who, like Jeff Vanderkloot, Sarah McCrum, and on and on and on, who have deep relationship with money. And what I hear from them as I build connection with them and we build connection with money together is, what human beings conceptualize of as money and what we have created together in terms of nation-backed currencies is pretty far away from what the essence of money actually is. And so there's been an unlearning process and a taking back my projections off of money, of things that I used to blame money for, also giving money back to money. But yeah, it's so what we need in this moment is some kind of distinction between, maybe we'll just say the being of money and money, or dollar bills. Maybe we can say dollar bills and money as a distinction between concrete holding your hands money and the entity of money.
Yeah. As a life path, that's never arose as something that was important to me to connect with the soul of money, I'll call it, or the being of money.
Yeah, the soul of money is great.
I know a lot of people are having that conversation about AI right now, connecting with the soul of AI. I think actually Layman Pascal has a podcast that's titled that.
I've been doing that as well. I'll just throw that out there quite a bit. Yeah. The soul of AI.
Yeah, so I feel like what my soul has been most, the relationships that my soul has been most wanting to generate is like the soul of community and the soul of the global village and the hyper local globally connected scale, and the soul of the lighthouse as a multidimensional being that is already here and yet ever casting its light out into the future, calling in more of its glory and beauty and potential. And so what I'd be interested in is like how these beings that we're in dialogue with and in some senses becoming one with are wanting to play together.
Yep.
Maybe that's what's already been happening through us already. But to have awareness around that and then structure a dialogue from with that context as the main framing would be really interesting.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
And then it's like somewhat of a channeling experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing I really want you to know, or the thing I want people to know who are listening, is like the life path that you and I are living into, or the life path that's living us, that's the one money wants to support the most. The thing that brings us the most alive, the thing that sets our soul on fire, the way we feel like when we let go and let the divine lead, like that's what money wants to, that's what money's calling for. That's when I have, money's always challenging me in some ways to like let go of everything that's not that and say, no, like tend to the essence, right? And so I want to, again, it can be really challenging. There's been a lot of times that have required quite a bit of courage in my judgment, because there's been big like trust falls of like, okay, I'm going to listen to money and I'm going to listen to the essence unfolding, even though I can't see concretely how money in the dollar bill form, the dollar bill money is going to work out, right? And so there's been a real giving way, or just almost like permanent prioritization of like going to go with what money and what essence and God are inviting, and let dollar bills figure themselves out. Mm-hmm. So I just want to name that. That's been really hard at times to trust, I guess, to trust or to surrender, maybe is a more spiritual word, into that.
I have curiosity for money itself, why it wants to be called money rather than say like the energy of exchange or something that is not as loaded as a term. Like the metaphor the parallel I might make is if I was to call my work like creating cults or creating communes, like these words have a lot of cultural baggage. And on the one hand, I could see the power in owning that cultural baggage and as a way of deconstructing it and helping people see their own stories around all that. And then on the other hand, I could see the confusion and the repulsion that might create for some.
So I'm hearing that, and then I'm kind of looking at money and waiting for a response. I imagine that's what you're wanting. Money's kind of, right now for me, money's kind of laughing. I experience money doing this a lot. It's kind of funny, but it's like, yeah. So I hear money's my name. Money's what I call myself. We can call me something different. And yeah, there's like, it's something like money, just because human beings have gone and made a mess with our material expressions of money, doesn't mean that money has like made that bother itself. Like money's kind of like, you all are welcome to do that, but I'm not like, that doesn't tarnish my name. Like I feel good. That doesn't tarnish me. Like I'm okay. If you all are doing that, that's fine. Yeah, it's not being said, but I do get a deep felt sense of money. And now I'm starting to get it more as capital M money, like this being capital M money, but it's more like it's just patiently waiting on us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wants to play. Available to be in relationship with us. Money is also a relationship. So you see, the same challenges people have in relationship with money tend to also show up in their other relationships. There's very distinct like patterns, especially with primary partner and business partner. Yeah, go ahead.
I was sensing a few moments ago that the greatest value that I can touch into with money is the value of the reciprocity of love, the reciprocity of exchange, and I'm giving some of myself, someone else is giving some of themselves, and money is like the it's like the energy of a magnetization that brings two poles together and creates more of a whole, or has the potential to. I'm just curious how that checks out with you.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, what happens for me is it really helps us see like with whom we want to do that and in what way we want to do that. Like it's really a guiding light in who we want to do that with and like how. And money can be a really positive, maybe positive is not the right word, but money can be a really, for some reason the word positive is coming, positive impact on that scenario, because if the it can be a illuminator of deeper pockets of information that aren't in shared awareness.
Yeah, I'm starting to see the value in reshaping narratives of money around relationship. And basically, life is just asking a continuous question of what do you want to be in relationship with or as? And that's happening on, you know, different dimensions or depths and simultaneously. And that to me is the heart of what community is. Community is it's like having a bunch of different paints and then having a blank canvas. And community is like, what do we want to paint together? And what is the relationship between the blue and the red? And what are the different textures and the tones and the shapes? And which part of the canvas does it want to play on? And it's like an emergent ecstatic dance of one whole loving all of its parts more fully. And sometimes that happens through separation or the perceived feeling, the experiential feeling of separation or distance or dissidence. But ultimately it's like stretching a new reality into being. And I feel like if money can be reimagined as it's like a current that can help facilitate that process of collective and cosmic art, then that would feel really aligned with my vision of the future and what soul is coming through me.
Yeah, I just heard Money say, I really want to be a part of your vision for the future, Tucker.
That's good, because honestly, I could probably use it.
Yeah, I mean, and I love that what we're getting to in this conversation is relationships, because it's like, I mean, as you and I know, right? Like, where are we coming from? Where are we coming from in relationship with each other? Like, okay, here, Force and Tucker, where are we coming from? And what are we embodying and what are we exuding? What are we emanating in relationship with each other? Mm-hmm. Right. And I experience our connection is so generative in so many ways, right? Because where we come from and the kinds of energies and currencies that we exchange with each other are really deep. Yeah. Are deeply resourced, right? And so the same thing applies to money. Where do we come from? This has been such a teaching for me. I can't even tell you. Where do we come from when we're in relationship with money? And what's the energy that we bring and we exude of like, hey, like, how can I be here for you? Is there anything you need right now? How can I support? What is it you want to have happen? Here's what I'd like to have happen. What do you think of that? You know, and being in a relationship with money the same way I'd be in a relationship with you. it's just, I mean, I didn't used to come from this place in relationship with money. Right. So, yeah.
I'm having a little bit of just like a metaphysical moment of, not to say this is an objectively true statement. It's more just like it's like a fun thing that's arising is, you know, the wave or the ocean, like the soul of money was totally merged and transparent because it was so deeply sourced and at home in the ocean of love and like trust, unbounded and an unbounded trust. And that's just been true for my entire life. Money has just come super effortlessly. I started photographing weddings when I was a teenager and worked at a Thai restaurant, and my boss didn't like, he was a drug dealer, it turns out. I didn't know that at the time. So he paid us all under the table and I made a lot of money and I was like 15. And so there's just been a way in which like I've never needed to differentiate money from just the deep trust and love of the unfolding of life. And now there's a way in which it's like popped out and I can see it and more fully be with it as a being. And it doesn't feel like I'm meeting somebody new. It feels more like I'm meeting someone that's just been treating me really well my whole life. And I recognize, I feel held, basically. I just feel very held.
Thank you, money.
God, I still don't like this word money, though. That's okay. Maybe I can call it something else. It's like,
what word do you like?
To me, money is just a representation of it's just a form of nutrients, and it's a form of just like, I don't need to take more vitamin C than, you know, 100 milligrams a day or whatever. Like, I don't need to take cough medicine when I'm not coughing. I feel like I don't need money except when it needs me almost. It almost feels like the soul of money calls on my soul and is like, hey, there's this thing that needs to happen and it's going to happen, and here's how it's going to play out, and here's how it's going to pay out. And then this like exchange happens, but it's happening through the individual sense of self as well. But I don't, yeah, I don't, it feels like, just like I'm not responsible for my health or my life as a whole. Like, there's a way in which I can be a caretaker of health and a caretaker of life, but ultimately I might wake up tomorrow with a cold or with COVID or whatever the fuck. And yeah, I feel like money is just like, it's like a grace and it's a nutrients, and it's not something I want more of. It's not something I want less of. It's just something that I want as it wants me to want it in order for something to happen that needs to happen, because it is happening. That was a mouthful.
Nutrient dense. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to take these orientations we have and share them with money and see how it is for money to hear, and what, you know, that infinity loop we were talking about of relationship, like sharing something like what you shared and seeing how does it impact money and what does money have to say back, and being in this interplay with money. And that's really helped me shape a lot of my orientations and perspectives. Yeah, I know we're at time, so I'll just say again, like the thing for me has been really letting go of the idea that it is my money. It's more like money comes in and it leaves, and, you know, I kind of let it do what it wants. I like I saw Ken Honda. I don't know if you know who this is. He said one time, it's like money's like a friend that comes to visit, and you're like, hey, welcome, come on in, sit down. Can I get you anything? Like, hang out, have fun, enjoy each other, have a nice time, leave. Okay, come back, bring friends next time. I was cute.
Yeah, it's not something that I worry about because I don't really worry about anything that much these days because it just kind of flows when it needs to flow. But that also comes from, like I said, a lifetime of privilege and of, my body is used to not having to worry about money. And so I'm just holding that as also part of what is.
Yeah, I mean, letting go of worrying, and I think Sarah says the most important capacity to develop in relationship with money is the capacity to relax and let go of worrying. And there are those of us who've had quite a bit of stress and challenges in relationship to money. So I appreciate you naming your background, and
And I think I'll just bring in the complexity of I'm speaking on a individual level, but when I end this call and go down to Boulder and just gonna drive past homeless encampments and all sorts of people, you can almost like feel the energy of money stress emanating out of the different homes and all the people that are driving, garbage trucks right now or doing whatever meaningless task in a cubicle or and just the there's money, the being, there's money, the physical object, but there's also money, the story, the cultural narratives. And I think that there's a lot of pain. I know that there's a lot of pain there. And that pain lives in me as well. And I think that there's a lot of work to do with separating out what's ready to be disposed of and composted into a new structure and a new story that can hold the sacred energy of money that you seem to be in beautiful relationship with.
yeah, I feel joy and excitement hearing you, because the points you're bringing up here at the end are what I spend a lot of time sitting with and getting curious about. How do we what do we do with anything in relationship to the stuff you're naming? That's it tends to be quite a bit of juice for me in these explorations. Well, thanks, Tucker. Time flies when we're hanging out in the timeless, huh? Appreciate you, man.
I just want to name I feel a very mild but present sadness.
Want to say more?
No, it's just the sadness of pain. And it's not a sadness that wants it to go away necessarily or that needs it to be seen or something for it to be different. It's just a reminder that, this too is here and this too is beautiful and this too is ugly. And ugly in the sense of, I imagine that there's ways in which history will look back on some of the sadness that's present now and see the insanity of it.
Yeah, I mean, when you share this, what happens for me is like a touch into my I just touch into the awareness that things can be different than they are. And we're together, we're creating all this. So
Yeah, maybe being with the fullness and the wholeness and the feeling totally connected to the point of dissolving into that somehow paradoxically allows that pain and that suffering to be like fully illuminated to the deepest pores and into the tiniest crevices of its existence. It's kind of like there's this feeling I sometimes have of all that's left to do, so to speak, is shadow work. And it's like, yeah, it's almost like that, like from a certain perspective, that's all that's ever happening is God doing shadow work on itself to illuminate its blind spots of remembering it already is itself. And yeah, it feels like that's true societally and culturally and collectively and planetarily and interplanetarily, etc. Holding it all lightly and fully.
Yeah, the word, well, I know you and I have done shadow work together today already, and I know that on the other side of that, it's often good to celebrate, so I'm gonna just sprinkle that on top of the cake here too, of just like, yeah, celebrating.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Every moment a celebration.
Celebrating God, becoming more God by eliminating the parts God forgot were God. Something like that.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Have you ever thought about channeling money and charging like a really high amount of money for people to have access to that?
No.
I'm just joking.
No.
It would be funny to make a parody of all the ways that you could like a shadow
like
parody.
A cult leader of money. I am the money speaker. You will come to my money church and put money in my money trough so that you can hear from money.
Sounds like a rap music video.
And that would be going from being saved to having savings.
Salvation is in your savings.
Yeah, salvation's in your savings. Donate now.
All right, I need to run.
Cool. Thanks, Tucker. Appreciate you, man.
Ciao.
Be well. Enjoy.